Hey guys, welcome back to the Real Estate Monopoly. My name is Kerwin.
My name is Jeffrey.
And this is the Real Estate Monopoly. Today we have an awesome guest, but today I was able to get Jeffrey here.
Yeah,
Jeffrey,
how are you doing? Doing well. Today's been a little bit of a stressful day. We're working on a lot of things, yes. But I always like to say pressure is a privilege.
Yeah, and quote of the week is to roll with the punches. Yeah. So we are rolling with the punches.
A lot of them, but it's good.
And hopefully, I mean, our guest today can kind of dive into the mindset of it takes to survive and thrive as a real estate investor. But Eileen, first and foremost, please introduce yourself to the audience.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show, you guys. I really appreciate it. And thank you everyone for listening. But so I'm Eileen Prack, and I am a full-time still W-2 worker, also invest in real estate. My primary focus is actively investing and passively investing in multifamily syndications. And we do a little bit of self-storage as well. And so I'm also a mom of two. I host also a 5-day-a-week podcast, and overall just, loving life and sharing the knowledge that we've been able to accumulate and, just trying to share that with everybody else as well.
I love that. First, and we did touch on this a little bit before the interview, but you are very accomplished in your W-2 career. You're in the aerospace industry, and I was just really fascinated because a lot of people in the W-2, like corporate rat race, will think, oh, I'm already accomplished. Like, you already made it. So what's the point of investing in something like real estate and putting in the time and effort it takes to build relationships, find deals, put out a podcast? Like, well, why even do that if you're so successful in your other space and career path?
That is a great point, because a lot of people who are accomplished in their careers, you also have like the doctors and the lawyers. The one thing about it by working a W-2 job is, although you're getting that weekly, biweekly paycheck consistently, right? But the control is not within your court. Your employer has always had the opportunity to take away that privilege, in a sense, whenever it doesn't meet their needs or the environment changes. So that paycheck could essentially just go away at any moment and any given notice. So by investing in real estate and finding other ways to find passive income, we're able to offset some of that risk of having to rely on that W-2 paycheck coming in and creating that passive income, so that if something were to happen, I have a family myself. If something were to happen, I want to make sure that we can still support my kids, my husband, my spouse, my family, still live the lifestyle that we want to, without having to rely on the W-2. So it's just another way to hedge against the risk of that aspect of it and taking the control back in your court.
I love that. That's awesome. And we're going to dive into the real estate side of things. But first and foremost, I do want to touch on your like background and your family's background. So for context, my brothers and I, we come from an immigrant mother. We grew up low income. And so growing up, like, there was some hardships, quote unquote, like what other people would see as hardships. But in the time, it wasn't hard because it was just our normal. But in hindsight, we realized that a lot of the adversity that we faced growing up has helped us cultivate like a really thick skin and the right mindset it takes to survive and thrive as an investor and an entrepreneur. And so I was curious, like, what about your background maybe kind of help prepare you in terms of your mindset, and you can maybe expand on your parents' immigrant background and maybe some philosophy or lessons they taught you.
Yeah. So I think with my parents coming from, a third world country without any knowledge of the English language, without having a network here, they basically came with nothing, like no money or anything like that, because they were refugees coming into this country, fleeing, the war and everything like that in their past country. And so when they came here, they had to really struggle and thrive and build themselves up from scratch, like learn the language, figure out how the system works, earn a living, provide for their family. And so that resiliency and that hard work has really resonated with me and how I look and approach at everything. And so, that what they always say, get your education, get a solid foundation, because basically everything can be taken away from you, but your education, your knowledge, what you've put into your brain can't be taken away. You can always build yourself back up that way. And so that has always resonated with us. And we see like how hard they had to work to be able to get to where they are today, to be able to provide me and my sister, it was just the two of us, with a really great foundation, really secure. We never lacked anything, mm-hmm. And so they always went above and beyond and tried to do what they could for us, because they came from such a hardship country and hardship life that they don't want their kids to face those same types of adversity. They're trying to provide additional opportunities for us by giving us, you know, like the best education that they could, you know, like instilling in us, you know, the hard work ethic, morals, and everything like that, so that you can continue to succeed, so that the next generations can continue to build upon that and have even more opportunities as they continue to grow.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And similar to us, our mom taught us, you know, the importance of having a strong work ethic and living frugally and all these certain things that have helped us so far in our journey. So on the back end of that, were there any like mindsets or any, I guess, thinking patterns that you had to break out of?
Yeah, like misconceptions or limiting beliefs that you maybe inherited, or just kind of developed as a result of coming from that background?
I think one of the things is that, you know, you have to go a certain path. My parents have always been pretty supportive, but it's like, you know, they want to make sure that whatever you do is stable and secure, that you're not taking unnecessary risks, because it's so easy to lose what you've built up. And so the steps that you're taking for the future, you need to walk carefully and cautiously so that you don't make the mistakes and have to take several steps back. So that's how we approach things in life, is we look at things and we make calculated risks and take all that into consideration so we can like move forward and take those next steps. So even though it takes us a little bit longer to do a couple of those things, it's because we're evaluating as much as we can, trying to mitigate and seeing where the pitfalls are before we step into it. And so I think that's one of the things that, you know, has served us a lot. But at the same time, I think it could be a little bit limiting as well, because it prevents you from going and thinking bigger, and that you can do like so much more, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're like, okay, we're so focused on some of these risks and things like that. And so some of these bigger things about like investing and being able to, you know, partner on these bigger deals, some of those things that they weren't exposed to, it's like, well, is that true? You know, like, can you really do that? Be cautious about what you're doing. And so it that kind of fuels into some of that mindset and that thinking. But they've always been supportive and like look at things and say, hey, make sure you do your due diligence, make sure you're walking, you know, a cautious path. But we support you in what you guys do. And so that's kind of what we've been taught and how it kind of helps us.
Oh yeah, I love that. And to kind of transition into the real estate side of things, at what point did you kind of get into real estate, and how was that first deal? What was that like? How did you come about it? And I mean, I'd love it if you could maybe connect that into the multifamily space. I don't know if you started out with multifamily directly, or can you just provide some clarity there?
So for me, it started out when I was pregnant with my son. Well, I guess I'll go back a little bit. So my parents and my family also invest in real estate. So we've been able to see that they've been able to create passive income for themselves, generate it, supplement income and everything like that. And so we always knew it was a great avenue and a great place to create cash flow and appreciation. However, it didn't really sink until I became a parent myself and I was pregnant with my first son. And then at that moment, I remember, you know, after working your W-2 jobs, you get 3 months of maternity leave. And during that time, you're able to spend it with your kid and everything like that. But after 3 months, what happens? You have to go back to work. You have to figure out where you're going to put your kid. And so we had to put him in daycare. And so I remember at that time, it was a really hard decision. And when we did, I remember like 2 weeks after we had put him in there, we get a phone call from the daycare saying like, hey, your son is sick. You need to come pick him up. Me and my husband work far away. We had to commute and I had to do like a van pool. So I didn't have an immediate means of transportation to go pick him up right away. And so in that moment, it really clicked for me. I was like, I have to find a better way to do things. I can't just rely on this to not be able to be there for my kid when he really needs it. And so that's why we started looking for different ways to create passive income and create alternative additional income for ourselves. And so that's why we started looking for different ways. And we always stumbled back onto real estate. And we actually started with single family. So we did a couple of turnkeys. However, what we found with single families was you're the value of the single family is really based on the comparables. So what happens if your next door neighbor, you know, he loses or he goes into some type of financial hardship and now he's unable to pay for his mortgage, his value of his house drops significantly. What does that do to your house? It also drops significantly with it, right? And so when we were looking at that and looking at different ways to create additional cash flow and scaling up and trying to offset like our W-2 incomes, we're like, there has to be another better way to do this. So we started networking some more, and that's how we came upon multifamily. And we love that model because now you're not basing it off of comparables and what your next door neighbor is valued at. You're basing it off of the income and the bottom line. And so it's really you're investing into a business where you have control over how much value is actually added into that property. And so that kind of started our whole journey with multifamily.
Well, that's awesome. And I just wanted to kind of touch on, because a lot of people will go to invest in real estate because it's kind of like more secure and there's more control than like the stock market. But even within real estate itself, there's levels to control because you can control the value of a multifamily property, maybe arguably a bit more than you could a single family house. Do you agree, Jeff?
Yeah. I mean, I think it all comes down to how you operate it, right? Yeah. And like you said, it's like buying a business and you're just trying to increase the income while decreasing the amount of expenses so that you can have the biggest amount at the bottom line. And I think it's amazing. And in comparison to the single family space, it sounds like eventually you made that transition. Do you mind sort of explaining what that looked like? I mean, for us, we read one book. The first book we read was The Best Ever Apartment Syndication Book by Joe Fairless, which to tie into your point, you mentioned building that foundational knowledge. That's exactly what we did. We treated that book like a textbook, and Carolina Aldridge sat down and like it was like a week. I don't know how long it took
us. It was a while.
It took us a little longer than we thought it would, but it was a pretty long book. And eventually we started taking notes and we mastermind after sat down and decided what the next action steps were. So that was really the first book that got us into the space. I'm not sure.
And I know you always cite that book as like your favorite real estate book.
Yes, so because it was my first book also. I think it's most people's first book because it is written like very textbook, like, a very great guide step-by-step on the whole entire life cycle of what a multifamily syndication looks like from start to finish. So I think that was fantastic.
So was your first investment in the multifamily space, was that a passive investment?
Yes, it was a passive investment because for us, it was like, let's partner with somebody who's already had the track record. Mm-hmm. Let's see if this model is feasible and let's test it out with our own capital first. And like, let's see, because syndications, nobody in our network had ever invested in something like that before that we had known of. And so that's why we're like, let's test out this model, test out the feasibility, have this proof of concept before we jump in a little bit more.
Yeah. And so how did you find that first sponsor? How did you vet them?
Yeah, it was all through the podcast. And so with the books that we read, Joe Fairless is being one of them, we really deep dived in, listened to a bunch of podcasts just like your guys's, and listened to it. And really, that's where we got our education in. I mentioned I had a long commute. My commute time every day was about, I think, almost 3 hours back and forth to work. And so I would just listen to podcasts all the time during those commute times. And so just consumed as much content as I could.
Yeah. And so once you kind of vetted them, I know you guys are obviously now on the active side. Can you maybe explain what your journey was as a passive investor and how you've kind of translated that into becoming an active investor today?
Yeah. So it really helps really understand what you're looking for as an investor when you start off as a limited partner, because now you get to see how the distributions are. Well, I guess, first of all, you get to see how the deals are coming about. You know, you get to see and evaluate what are some of the things that the sponsors are looking for. How do they evaluate the deal? You know, how are they going to execute their business plan? And you can ask all these questions up front to the experienced sponsor as a passive investor, and then just really get your due diligence in and just trying to understand that business model and how this all works and plays together. And so it really fast-tracked ours, because at one point, even though you're able to read and you're listening to podcasts, educating yourself, there comes a point where you just have to take action because you don't know what you don't know. You can read all the books and everything like that you want, listen to all the podcasts, but it isn't until you really take that next step after you've done your due diligence and come to that point, the next feasible option is test it out, test the waters out, and take action with it. And so that has really shaped us in how we look at syndications and multifamily as we transition into like the into the more active roles, because it's always, you know, what do we look for as a passive investor first? You know, what's important to us as an investor?
I love that, because you can get like both perspectives, and it's really important to put yourself in the shoes of that investor that you're trying to raise capital from.
Yeah. And I'm sure you experienced, I'm not sure how many LP investments you made before you became active, but from my perspective as an active investor, based on what my passive investors have told me, it's always comes down to the number one thing, which is communication. And I'm curious, like, with the communication, I guess, were those types of levels different based on the sponsor?
Yes. Not all sponsors are made equally. Right. And so
that's really a nice way to put it.
There are some, you know, who really align with what your goals are and what your values are and how they communicate, how they bring themselves up in their communication and how they, you know, come across. And so those are the ones where you're building up the relationship with, you're building up a stronger relationship with them, deep diving it to them, really, because it's a long-term investment with them. You're wanting to make sure that the communication is going to be suiting your needs. If you're a person who needs consistent communication, you're not going to be happy with a sponsor who communicates maybe monthly or, you know, like semi-annually. You know, you maybe want somebody who communicates monthly. You might be an investor who is like, well, I don't need all that communication. I just want to make sure that I'm getting my distributions. So I don't really care how many times they communicate with me. I just want to make sure that I'm getting my money, you know? So it really just depends on you and how you want to be communicated to and what kind of transparency levels you want to be, you want to see with the people that you're working with. And it's really, you know, it's just trying to fit out the best fit. It's like a lot of people compare it to dating, right? So you're trying to do, in a sense, like speed dating and trying to figure out like, who's the best one for me? Like who's going to be like, who's going to meet my needs and make me feel comfortable that they're going to be good stewards of my capital.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's awesome. It's really cool to see, because you have also, in terms of your own podcast, it's awesome to like full circle moment, because we were on yours and now you're on ours. And you guys are killing it. Your podcast, how many episodes are you at right now?
We actually just hit our 500th episode last week. So
I love it. I love
super
it.
Super excited. Thank you.
That's a big milestone. Hopefully we'll get there someday. Thank you. Well, you guys are putting out like 5 a week. So of course, you know, that's awesome. And I'd love to know, I know in the past somebody's asked you what like some takeaways were from having so many awesome investors and real estate influencers on your show. I would love to know, what is some of the biggest mindset takeaways and like mindset tips and advice that you've kind of obtained from guests you've had on the show?
The biggest one is overcoming your limiting beliefs and start to dream again. Because I think as we get older and as you are conditioned a certain way, you go into your W-2 jobs, you're conditioned to think that this is all that I amount to. This is how I identify myself, you know, as an engineer, as a finance person or something like that. But, you know, if that's what you identify with, that's perfectly fine. But you can also think of yourself as other things too. And you just have to think a little bit bigger and start thinking about the possibilities out there. And don't let those limiting beliefs about yourself and what you're capable of hold you back, because really it's just ourselves telling ourselves what we can and cannot do. And when we can overcome those types of things, we're opening ourselves to a lot more possibilities out there and the ability to, you know, supplement and create more passive income. You know, even if you want to continue working your W-2 job, at least you're not reliant on it. If something happens, you have something coming out. It's all about control, and it's all about creating choices for yourself and choosing to continue to work your W-2 job or choosing to spend time with your family. You know, it's all about choice in the end and how we want to spend our time and who we want to spend it with.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I don't know if you can read the poster we have behind us, but it says it all starts with the dream. And that's exactly what we can agree more. And I think another thing is, as you're breaking into anything that's new or trying to do something that's a little scary, you surround yourself with people that are doing whatever it is that you're trying to do. And that's what you're doing through your podcast. Cameron said 5 times a week. That's amazing. And you're doing that almost daily. You're spending time with people that are living out their dreams. I assume that's why you're bringing them on the show. So that's amazing. And it seems like the barrier to entry nowadays, especially with the internet and the ability to create our own podcast. I mean, we started ours when we were like, how old were we? 19, maybe?
Yeah, 19.
And they were talking to like these, you know, really, really successful people in the commercial real estate space. And they were open to coming on and giving us their time just because of the platform.
I would even say, though, like, it's not just old people, because even
we didn't say old people.
She said, as you get older. And a lot of like our peers who I would say, you know, are younger than a lot of people in this space, they are going into like the workforce thinking, oh, I have to do this, or I'm already this, like I'm already a student. I'm only a student. I'm only I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a doctor. They really have like that tunnel vision. And that's okay, because you're focused, but they don't really open themselves up to other possibilities. And in a way, they've already kind of killed their dreams before they even really start getting to the point of the
age. They don't realize it.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's the system, which we can talk about. It's like another episode of the conspiracy, but yeah. So that's an awesome takeaways there. I did want to ask, I know you have a background in risk management and in finances. I'd love to know, and you don't have to necessarily like get into the underwriting details, but in terms of like vetting your opportunities or anything like that, are there any tips or kind of insights you have when it comes to managing risk when you're looking for investment opportunities?
Yes. So with any investments, right, there's always the risk of losing money. That's the biggest risk of all. It's, we're just going to lose all the capital. So one thing that we did like about investing as passive investors is that you're limited to just the capital that you're investing in. So if you put $50,000, you're just limited to that $50,000 that, you know, that you could potentially lose. But how we can mitigate that risk of losing that capital is, one, do your due diligence upfront with your sponsor, because that is the biggest risk of all. You're going to be depending on that person to make sure, or that team to make sure, that they're going to really take your dollar the furthest that it can go. And, you know, if all things go wrong, how are they going to show up, and how are they going to handle and manage the situation so that you don't lose your capital, that they protect it, you know, not just like their own money, but maybe like their grandparents' money, you know, you want someone to take a look at it like that. And so from there, you look at their business plan, and you start deep diving into, well, what are some of the contingencies that they've put into their plan? What kind of reserves are they holding in case something comes down? You know, is it sufficient? Like if they, like, let's say on a monthly basis, they aren't able to meet their rent collections for that month, how much contingency do they have in order to pay for that, to make sure that everything's operating smoothly and that you're never in a situation where you have to sell it? You know, you're looking at all these different aspects. The other things that we look at too is their, like the interest rates. Are they being conservative in their numbers? Are they, especially right now, interest rates are so high, are they projecting like old rates, or are they actually putting in some additional projections, like another point or something, like a point or two above what they're getting? You know, all these little things just add up. But for us, it's a lot of it is about the reserves aspect and how much they put aside and their assumptions of whether or not their business plan is feasible. And is it aggressive? Like if they're looking to do a value add play in their business plan, you know, are they planning to turn over 10 units every single month? Is that feasible? You know, like especially with the labor and everything and the material shortages in that market, are they going to be able to achieve that? Is it really like three, you know? And so all these questions we take a look at, and then we put those pieces together. And it's really about the open communication with the sponsors and how much transparency are they willing to give to you as the investor, to get you feeling comfortable with the investment that you're going to make with them.
Yeah, 100%. And this is more like a philosophical question, so feel free if you like don't really like understand how to answer it or what I'm asking. But for when it comes to investing, I feel like that's like a mental hurdle someone needs to make. They have to accept that there's a chance they're going to lose money, because you have to accept that that's a possibility, because every investment comes with risk, like you said. So what advice do you have for somebody who has yet to make that leap? And maybe like, what's your thought process with that?
So when we invest and we think about like stocks, for example, you'll put the money in the stocks, and a lot of people don't have any issues with, you know, investing in stocks. The control is no longer there though, because now you're just waiting for, you know, something to happen in the market, something to happen within the company, some economic changes in the, or governmental changes that will impact the price of your stock. And those valuations will go up and down. And so when it goes down, people are like, oh, I just need to pull it out, you know, if things happen, right? With real estate, you're able to control that a little bit more. You're able to impact it, because now there's levers and there's different ways that you can increase it or impact the bottom line directly, you know. And so it's working with the tenants, working with the property managers, you know, maybe optimizing some of your expenses. And so, yes, there's the opportunity, or there's the risk of losing all of your capital, but what's the big risk out there? How are they mitigating it? We actually have more control within real estate than we have in like stocks. And so that's why for us, we like that aspect of it, because there's direct impact of how we're going to impact the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And so that gives us a little bit more control, and that gives us a little bit more of a comfort feeling that we have some ability to impact our investment there.
Yeah, I completely agree. And not just that, but like also not just stocks, Bitcoin, for example. Like people think, we have an uncle or a cousin that he's like, oh yeah, I have Bitcoin. And a lot of these people, they see it as an investment. And I mean, it arguably will eventually become something stable, but for now it's just speculation and it fluctuates so much. But also for me, the people that their default is, if they're not going to be investing, they're just leaving it in the bank. They're also losing a lot of value of their money to inflation. So in a way, like they're already losing. I don't know if you want to touch on that at all, Jeff.
Yeah, but I just think like I was going to add on, like, what's the alternative outside of real estate? And I guess just in comparison to all the other asset classes and investment types that you could invest in, there's always going to be risk. Now, which one do you have most control in, and also which one offers the most benefit? In my opinion, that's real estate, and that's why we invest in real estate.
Yeah, and like stocks, fantastic investment vehicle. You know, it works for a lot of different people.
Yeah.
People have been able to make quite a bit of money within stocks. But just our own personal investing appetite and the way we look at things, we want to have a little bit more impact and want to see how the bottom line is being impacted and have some type of control of what our money is doing for us. And so that's why we do like real estate as well, because you're also getting not only the cash flow, you're getting appreciation, you're also getting tax benefits with a depreciation, like cost segregation and everything like that. There are no other asset classes that can have the same benefits as real estate. So you're hitting it from all different sides.
Yeah. And just to add, the last benefit is an inflation hedge against what's going on with the Fed and all of the quantitative easing going on. I don't know. The stock market is like 6% average annually, with inflation being over 8%. I mean, depending on how your portfolio is performing, you technically are losing money. If you're not doing better than that, and with the rents going up, as inflation goes up, that's how real estate, specifically in the multifamily space, acts as an inflation hedging asset. So I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And we always have people, right? And where do people always need a place to live? And so there's always going to be a need for real estate, for rentals. And so that's another hedge against the risk also. It's like, what's the demand there? There's always going to be the demand.
Absolutely. And a common theme of this whole conversation has been control, like having some kind of control over the value of your asset. And there's a lot of different real estate kind of groups or types of real estate. I know you also invest in self-storage. And it's obviously like people aren't living in the units, hopefully. You know.
Although I'll give you a funny story on that.
Please. Oh no, I spoke too soon. Okay.
No, one time, so when we were looking at the self-storage, like she mentioned, we joint ventured on an opportunity. It was a portfolio down in Mississippi. Mm. And so my husband went out and they were doing the due diligence on the property. They were walking it. And one of the units actually had it open. The door was open. And there was a guy who had set up shop there and was basically living inside one of those self-storage units. Nice. And we're like, oh, that's not, I don't think that these of us do that. And so he had like a futon set up and a, like TV set out over there. And so that was
cheap rent,
really crazy.
Man cave.
Oh. Yes.
Well, the question I wanted to kind of touch on was like, if they have control, so let's say you're like not going to be adding value as you traditionally would with like an apartment, where like bumping rats, fixing amenities, things like that. What are some ways you can force appreciation on a self-storage property and add value that way?
Yeah, with self-storage, we love that property. We love that asset class because you're not dealing with like tenants. Yes. You're not dealing with the maintenance of having to go fix the toilets, the lighting, whatever like that. There's not a lot of maintenance that's needed. So some of the things that we're doing right now to add value to the property is, making everything more online, making things, you know, you're able to rent the storages online. You get rid of some of the touch touch points instead, right? Some of the on-site managers, you don't really need that. Now everything, you can do it online virtually instead. So you can go in, rent a storage space without having to actually speak to somebody or, because a lot of times now, like that's what everybody's used to. It's like, I just want to go in, rent one and then just put my stuff in there and get out. I don't really want to have to deal with any personnel or anything like that. Yeah. So that's one of the ways to cut costs, is making things more electronic and make things more virtual, adding kiosks. Some of the other things that you can do too is, you know, there was some land out over there. You can rent out some of the land to do like a cell phone tower, rent that out and lease out some of that, or lease out some of that land for that aspect of it too. And so, and even like rent increases, right, for the self-storage. When you increase the rents, you know, by a couple dollars or whatever like that, people are not going to take and spend the effort to move all their stuff from that self-storage to another self-storage. The hassle there and the headache and like the cost of the movers, it's quite expensive. And so typically, you know, self-storage is not like a huge, you know, expense on their end. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of an increase to bring it to market rates, it's not going to have a huge like turnaround or turnover for your tenants and your renters.
Awesome. Awesome. And sorry, I just really curious. How did you get the person out of the, like, do you evict them?
No, I think we had to send somebody out there, like the management company, to be like, hey, you know, you can't, you're not supposed to do this. So you got to pack up, but
that's a form of adding value, right? That's, I love that. Awesome. Thank you so much, Eileen. It is time for our speed round. Are you ready?
Yes.
Awesome. All right. First question, what has been the biggest failure that you've encountered throughout your real estate journey? And what did you take away from that experience?
So I don't really consider any like huge failures or anything like that. I consider them as lessons. Somebody on my podcast had called them seminars. And so he has a ton of seminars. And so every challenge that we face is always something that we're just learning from, and how do we pivot away from that? And so I'll give an example right now. We had just signed on a master lease for a 62 unit property in Las Vegas. And so we're operating on ourselves. And so one of the challenges that we had was the property management team wasn't a real property manager. It was just one of the tenants. And she actually wanted to stay there for 2 months as a property manager until she finds something else. And so that was actually a big mistake on our end, because we didn't have a relationship with her. We didn't know like her background either, but we're like, okay, she's been there for quite a while. She's been managing the property. Let's do that. It's fine. But what we realized was that it was actually causing more headaches and causing a little bit more confusion with the tenants and everything like that, with the takeover and the conversion over from their group with our group. And so that had delayed us with some of our business plans and the rentals and things like that. The counting of everything was very, very mismanaged. Mm-hmm. And so it just added more complexity to the whole entire situation. And so something like that, it's like, we'll always take those lessons learned and then we apply it for the future. And, you know, it's all about how you pivot and how do you learn from those challenges and those things that you encounter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Eileen, I know you mentioned the best ever apartment syndication book is one of your top books, but besides that, what is your favorite book in business, life, real estate, whatever you want?
So the other book that I've been reading was the Who Not How book. And that one is a fantastic book because it lets us think about things a little bit differently and not just problem solve, but who are the people around us who can actually help us solve our issues, or who can actually get us to that next level. Because really in life, it's not about the problem itself. It's about the relationships that we're building and our network and who we're connecting with.
100% agree. Your network is your net worth. So that's awesome. What is one thing that you are doing now today in real estate or your business that you weren't doing when you first started that's helping you?
I would say the podcast, because in the past I was just listening to the podcast, but actually starting one that has actually increased our network, has created opportunities, partnerships. And so that has really been a big trajectory in our business by starting the podcast and a thought leadership.
Great answer. I love it. I love it. awesome. And you shared a ton of knowledge today. I really appreciate it. But if there was one piece of advice or wisdom you'd want someone to walk away with from this episode, what would that be?
I would say the biggest thing is something that we had kind of mentioned a little bit earlier is about the mindset and getting over your limiting beliefs. Because I think when we first started, I was always mentioning like, hey, you know, I think I could start a podcast. Like, I think that this would really help us with our real estate and everything like that, build up our knowledge base, build up our network. But I didn't start it right away. It took me like, I think more than half a year to actually get started and actually move forward with actually getting started with the podcast and releasing it and doing episodes, because I always had a limiting belief on myself saying that mm-hmm. like, hey, nobody's going to listen to me. Who are the guests who are going to want to come on to somebody's podcast who has zero experience within real estate and the multifamily space, you know? And so actually when I got started and got over those limiting beliefs, I was so surprised at how willing people were willing to come on and share their knowledge and expertise, mm-hmm. because now you're providing them with value, giving them a platform to come and speak onto your podcast and sharing their story with your network and, you know, helping them out too. So you're adding value to them. Whereas before you're thinking that, hey, I don't have experience, mm-hmm. you know, like I don't have the knowledge. Why would they come on? But now when you change it and think about it, it's like, I'm adding value to people. And so the mindset is a huge, huge factor.
Yeah. So you're welcome. 100%. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Well, I would love to know, I mean, moving forward, what are you aiming to accomplish in your business and kind of like, what's your vision for it?
So ultimately it's just to, you know, create enough the passive income so that we can overcome the W-2 job. So we're still on that path, but you know, before you're looking at ways and how do I get there? But it's so much more clear now. It's so much more expedited now with real estate. And for us, it's wanting to share the knowledge that we have, the experiences that we have within real estate with our network and the people who reach out, and just educating people and letting them know like, hey, it's possible. We can do these types of things. We just got to put ourselves a little bit out there, put in a little bit of the work, and then you can think bigger. And, you know, that's really our goal, is just to try to share it and then do as much as we can for the people around us and who are looking to get some more resources.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for being here, Eileen. If anyone in the audience wants to learn more about you, follow you on your journey, or just kind of get access to any opportunities you have, where can they go to find out more?
So if they are looking to educate themselves more on the passive investor side, we have a free resource out there. You know, it's a video series that we put out on how to do due diligence as a passive investor. So it's some of the questions that we ask the sponsors and look for as passive investors ourselves. And so they can just go ahead and download that. It's at bonavistcapital.com/checklist. And then we also provide a free checklist also with that.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being here, Eileen. It was a pleasure chatting with you. We had a lot of fun. Yeah, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Yeah. Thank you everyone for tuning in today to the show. Please make sure you guys leave a 5-star review and a comment if you enjoyed it, and let us know what your thoughts are. And guys, let's get out there and take action. Have a great day.